Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Friday, August 8th, 2014. It's just about 15:30 UTC, which you'll notice is a little bit later than we usually do it. Early Thursday UTC, Wednesday evening U.S. time, when we usually do it, I got a note from Yvonne saying, "Hey, I can't do it. At last minute, I thought I'd be able to, but I can't." I sent out the usual email to the two usual recent suspects who've co-hosted the show. Got nothing back, so they weren't available to do it the next evening. And so here I am on what is Friday morning, West Coast time, to record the show all by myself. Now, you know, my plan, you know, first of all, I thought, well, you know, I'll do it in previous evening, but of course things get away from me. So now I'm like, okay, I'll do it before I go into work. I got up a little bit early. I was like, okay, I'll do this and then I'll go to work. And then my phone goes off, telling me that I had an 8 a.m. conference call that I'd forgotten about. So I went and I did the 8 a.m. conference call. And by the way, I should say, it was a little bit annoying because, you know, there was one critical player on the call who didn't show up. And so therefore we had to reschedule the damn thing anyway. But I talked to a couple other of my colleagues about some related issues for 15, 20 minutes. Anyway, so I did some work already, but now I'm going to do this before I actually go into the office. Although I tell you, I'm going back and forth about this going into the office thing. Because although today isn't one of those days where I'm going to have to fight the massive commute and get really annoyed by spending 3 hours of the day on the road, it is not one of those days. However, and you may be able to tell this, I don't know if you can tell from listening, I'm so congested. And I have been, you know, I think I mentioned on the last show, or maybe it was the show before, where, you know, I was working from home and sort of, you know, I hit a wall and my productivity just sort of ended. And I was like, yeah, maybe it's the heat, maybe whatever. And then I tweeted a couple times, maybe it's not the heat. Maybe I'm getting sick. And I don't know, because like for like the last week and a half, I've just had this stuffy head, headache kind of thing that just ain't going away. And it may just be allergies, you know, and it does get worse when I forget to take my allergy meds. I have allergy meds I take every day. But it's there anyway, even if I'm fully medicated. And it is the sort of pattern where, you know, typically I've been able to get up in the morning and I'm sort of okay and blah, blah, blah. And then sort of mid to late afternoon, it's just like clobbers me. But today, like, it is morning. It is like 8:30 in the morning West Coast time as I'm recording this. And I'm just like all stuffed up. I mean, it's not like the kind of stuffed up that would stop me from working or from recording this stupid podcast. But it's the kind where you really just want to like lay there, sit and watch some TV, or go back to sleep. You know, you just don't really feel like doing anything. And I don't have any critical meetings today. There's like some sort of big team, you know, not the kind of, yeah, you guys know this kind of meeting. It's not the kind of meeting where you're actually doing work. It's the kind of meeting where you get hundreds of people in a large organization into a room together to get sort of an update on what's going on with the organization and how some of the big projects are going and to do some team building rah 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 exercises and that kind of stuff. I don't know. But I worked from home yesterday, so I feel bad not doing. Yeah, working from home or doing nothing today. I don't know. After I finish getting this podcast out, I'll decide how I feel, I guess. Anyway, since it's just me, and since I have a cold... Oh, who am I kidding? I'm going to do this thing. So it's going to be a short show. Bullshit. You know, every time I say that, I end up recording an hour or more anyway. So let's just see where we go. Look, there are a bunch of things going on. We got Iraq. There are a few election 2016 things. I can give an update on what I'm doing with my little website. And of course, one of the things that's been bubbling up over the last month or so is people trying to recruit Mitt Romney to run again, which is kind of interesting. We have news came out this week about Google scanning everybody's Gmail for signatures of child porn images and reporting them to the police whenever they find them. Apparently, somebody was arrested for that. We had some primary elections in a bunch of states, and so we've got, you know, stuff about incumbents being reelected. Surprise, surprise, all of them won their primaries. Not all, but almost all, like really, really high percentage. We got this whole Ebola thing that people are all worked up about for not much reason. We've got, there were some new releases about some more information about the terrorist watch lists and who was on them and how they've grown and stuff like that. But the interesting part of that isn't necessarily the revelations themselves, but that they contain information that happened after Snowden's leaks. So it indicates that somebody else leaking. And of course, Israel, Gaza. Clinton made some remarks, recordings surfaced of remarks Clinton made back in 2001 about Osama bin Laden that are interesting, and we have the ongoing torture report stuff. I don't know, which one of these things should I talk about? Anybody care? Anybody care? Oh, you can't answer me. That's right. So let me do my dice rolling thing and see where we go. Did I tell you I have a cold or something or allergies? It's bugging me. this is lovely. Okay. Choice number one. The torture report stuff. I don't know that there's too much new here, but Yvonne and I didn't really spend a lot of time talking about this, but I just want, you know, where we are with this thing is that the Senate spent a long time creating this report. They got to a certain point. They sent it over for comment to the CIA. The CIA had a whole bunch of objections to stuff. They produced a really long response document, I think, and then they sent it back. The Senate made some changes in response to the CIA's document, and then it was sent over back to the administration for declassification and redaction. And the administration decided to give that responsibility right back to the CIA. And, of course, the report is about CIA malfeasance. The CIA took a long time to do that, but then came back. And the Senate is like, wait a second, you've redacted important stuff. We don't like that. So we're going to hold up publication on this until we can get some explanations, et cetera, et cetera. And so it'll be a while yet till we see this thing. Meanwhile, you had the CIA got anxious about the Senate potentially having access to documents that the CIA thought they shouldn't have, and so they spied on the Senate computers. They denied spying on the Senate computers when the Senate caught them at this, and then they did an internal investigation and said, oops, oh, actually, we did spy on the Senate. Anyway, this is all a freaking mess. And the president this week came out and, basically indicated from his comments, and I'm not going to quote directly or anything like this, but that, you know, he wants the report to get out. He has redactions, blah, blah, blah. But you got to understand what the pressures these people were under. And has basically stood by, you know, what seems to have been his position all along, which is that there will be no accountability for any of this, or that this report itself will be the accountability, which most likely will not name names, will not assign direct responsibility. I could be wrong. I'm just guessing here. And will not, it'll say, okay, we did all these bad things. But where the president wants to go with this is, and we'll try to do better in the future. We shouldn't do this. It was bad that we did it. But we understand. We understand there were a lot of pressure. We understand the situation after 9/11. And, let's just hope next time we don't do this. with no actual repercussions to anyone involved, which sort of is another case where we're ignoring law that actually exists. The U.S. is party to and has signed treaties and has signed implementing legislation. Ronald Reagan signed some of this legislation, basically saying there was no excuse. There is no excuse. No matter what the circumstances around it, torture is not allowed. Period. End of story. Torture is not allowed. You do not do it. Done. It doesn't matter how you're, whether you're afraid, it doesn't matter what you're trying to prevent, torture is not allowed. Done. And there are supposed to be serious consequences and prosecutions, and, you know, the people responsible for it, frankly, should be tried as war criminals. And that's pretty clearly not going to happen under an Obama presidency, and it's frankly hard to imagine, who might win next time around or the time after that that would necessarily go after that. Maybe a Rand Paul would. I don't know. But you'd think that even in that case, there'd be so much political pressure because, you know, neither mainstream Republicans or mainstream Democrats want to go after this. I mean, you're talking about going after senior administration officials. Hell, you're probably talking about going after Dick Cheney and perhaps after George Bush himself for some of these actions. And certainly a lot of lower level people who signed off on that, some of whom are still in the current administration. I mean, George Brennan, who's the CIA guy who's been, who's in charge right now in the Obama administration, was involved in a lot of this stuff. So all I can say is I understand the politics of it. I understand the, you're a Democratic, you're a president, you're elected, you're a Democrat. You don't want to immediately be perceived as, hey, I'm doing a witch hunt and I am going to prosecute all the people in the previous administration who I disagreed with politically. I understand that. But this isn't just a political disagreement. This is, outright lawbreaking on something that goes against core items of American values. Well, you would think, except, if you put polling on it, this is not an open and shut question. This is one of the many items where the public is very much divided right down the middle, with quite a lot of people saying, hey, if it's what you need to do to prevent terrorism, of course you torture them. Of course you torture them. Of course you kill them. Of course you deny them due process. Everything. They're just a bunch of damn terrorists. Or, alternately, they're just Muslims. Or they're just Arabs. Or whatever. Because, of course, that plays a role in this, too. Because the reaction to this would would be a lot different if these people, looked a lot like, blonde, blue-eyed Americans. Of course, I say that, but in wartime, you dehumanize the enemy no matter what. I mean, Germans looked a lot like Americans in the First and Second World Wars, but Americans demonized them nonetheless, and were able to think of them as non-human. You look at a lot of the propaganda around there about the Huns and things like that. It's not recognizing that, there's a lot of stuff going on here. There's a war, but, they're still human. No, that doesn't happen. Anyway, I think this whole thing is a big shame. When we finally get this torture report, even if some of the redacting gets to be undone by the Senate committee and they get a little bit more than the current draft apparently is, it's still going to be highly redacted. We're still not going to learn a lot of things. And one of the things they're sensitive to is, of course, about revealing quote-unquote sources and methods. But guess what? This whole controversy is about the sources and methods. It's specifically, torture is a method. So you can't protect all of this. And also, if you protect the names of the individuals responsible for the decision making or the torture itself, guess what? You're again, that's the the whole point of an exercise like this should be to lay responsibility and bring to justice the people who did something wrong. And you can't do that if you redact their names. Anyway, we'll probably eventually get a report here, unless somebody leaks the damn thing, which, you know, I really hope somebody just leaks the unredacted version. And I'm not calling on anybody to do that, because, of course, that would be a crime. I don't know. The laws around this kind of stuff are stupid. But, you know, if somebody just leaked the whole unredacted thing, I understand why they could think that could be damaging. I understand why, you know, the CIA would be nervous about that, because it's laying bare all kinds of things about what the CIA has been doing. But if, in the end, the CIA was doing things they shouldn't be doing, then it needs to be revealed. It needs to be revealed publicly. It needs to be in the cold light of day. And we just need to deal with the consequences of that. And will it lower America's reputation in the world? Perhaps. But this is one of those things where I've seen all kinds of people, and this is not just about this report, obviously, but about all the Snowden leaks and everything else, where people have been saying, all these guys do is, they want to do is damage America's reputation. They want to damage Americans' reputation by revealing these things. And my response is, well, are the things true? Because if the things are true, then, you know, look, the analogy I keep thinking about, and I've been meaning to use this at some point when it came up on the show with Yvonne, but I never have, so I'll use it now, is, look, let's say you're married and you're having an affair, okay? And then somebody outside your affair, you know, one of your wife's friends or something, notices that you're having that affair and tells your wife, or just says it on Facebook, says it publicly, whatever. And then you're like, God damn my friend's wife, she ruined my marriage. No, your friend's wife didn't ruin your marriage. You ruined your marriage when you had the affair. You know, and specifically when you had it in secret. Of course, there are people that have arrangements with their wives and blah, 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 blah. There's, you know, but you know what I mean. Look, it's not the person who reveals the bad acting, the bad actions, that is responsible for the fact that the bad action causes your reputation to go down. It's the fact that you did the damn thing in the first place. Anything that you would not, and this is the sort of a fundamental thing I have, I guess, with the fundamental disconnect with the whole secrecy state, is, you know, if it's something that you would not feel like you could be happy about being public, you shouldn't be doing it in the first place. I understand, in some cases, the need for short-term operational security while you are doing something. I understand further that there are some things that are effective when they're secret, but become less so once they're widely known. I understand that. But I don't buy the argument that, you know, the person revealing the bad behavior is just out to, you know, lessen America's place in the world, or to damage relationships with one country or another. Saw this argument a lot about the spying on Germany kind of things. No, it's, you're damaging yourself when you do it. You can't be like, this is okay as long as it's secret. No. No. And, you know, I've said before, I think, for, you know, we've gone way, way, way over broad on classification and what can be secret in the first place. And there probably needs to be, you know, there does need to be some secrecy. And certainly another form of secrecy is, of course, confidentiality of, like, you know, yes, there are all kinds of personal information that the government keeps that you wouldn't necessarily want them to just put on a public website, like everybody's tax returns, for instance. It seems perfectly reasonable that there should be an automatic expiration date for anything that gets classified that's unchangeable and no exceptions. And you can argue about how long that length of time would be. I've said before, I think it should certainly be less than the length of a presidency. Okay, I can make this secret, but I can only make it secret for X amount of time. And at the end of that time, this becomes a public document available for everybody to inspect, unredacted. And I think that should be the expectation. And if you can't do what you're intending to do under those restrictions, you probably shouldn't be doing it. Anyway, I hope at some point, like some of the people responsible for all of this overreaction after 9/11 will be brought to justice. But I'm realistic. I know that's not going to happen, which is sad. We'll take a break. We'll be back after this.
Information.
Okay, I'm back. So as the morning goes on, we'll see. I think my odds of actually going to work today are dropping because it's getting worse, not better. But you know, I don't know. I may make myself do it. I don't know. I'll keep you updated throughout the show. Anyway, it's time to roll again. We got Iraq. Oh, good. I didn't want to skip without talking about this a little bit. So, yesterday, or earlier today, UTC, actually, Obama officially announced, after a day of confusion, at least in the press and on Twitter, that the U.S. was getting involved in Iraq in two ways. One, they were doing humanitarian airdrops on a group that had been chased up a mountain by the Islamic State / ISIS, whatever you want to call them, fighters. And they're basically, the expectation is that these guys are going to be massacred. And so they were chased up a mountain, and so we dropped some food and supplies and some water for them. Second, ISIS was doing an offensive against some cities, Erbil, which is in the Kurdish part of Iraq, and where there's an American consulate and a non-trivial American presence. And Obama basically said that we'll defend that you know, American interests in that city, including airstrikes. And the airdrop has happened. There have been some airstrikes already on Islamic State artillery positions and things along those lines. And so basically, we're getting involved in a combat situation in Iraq again. He made it very clear, no boots on the ground, this is limited involvement, blah, blah, blah. A few things to note about this. One, a number of people right after this noted You know, Obama looks very unhappy about having to use military power here. He looks like he's doing this, but he really, really, really doesn't want to, et cetera, et cetera. And many of these comments seem to be not just a statement of fact, but implying that this was a negative thing, that in some way he should be more enthusiastic about this. And my immediate reaction is, no, this is exactly, you know, I'm not sure whether or not this involvement is the right thing to do, period, but let's assume for the moment that it is. I want a president who struggles and agonizes about any decision to use military force. I don't want one who's happy to do it. I want one who really and truly thinks it's a last resort and only does it if everything else has been exhausted, and he really and truly feels this is the only way to move forward, and even better, that, you know, it goes through sort of the justification that in the end this will actually save lives. I'm not sure Obama's always been known for that. I mean, he seemed to be quite happy enough to drone people all over the Middle East, no matter the fact that there are lots of quote-unquote collateral damage, civilians killed in those incidents. He certainly doesn't always seem reluctant. He did indeed seem reluctant in this case. And, you know, that may relate to the fact that he's said all along, you know, one of his primary objectives as president was to get the hell out of Iraq. And this is sort of pulling us back in. You know, it's certainly not, you know, at the scale of, you know, the involvement in the Bush years. This is not an invasion of Iraq. This is much more like the, you know, some of the stuff that that Clinton did when he was president. But it's still drawing us back in. And interestingly enough, it seems like we're willing to defend sort of the Kurdish areas, but not the areas that were held by the actual Iraqi government. He also made it very clear that a significant point in this to him was that the Iraqi government had asked him to intervene. And a couple people pointed out, hey, that might have been a good reason to avoid getting involved in Libya, too, which I think everybody, well, maybe not everybody, I think has proved to be, you know, not necessarily, you know, there's been a lot of chaos in Libya that was kicked off by our involvement there, and Europe's involvement there. Now, it's hard to tell, you know, what would have happened if we hadn't done it. Who knows? But anyway, you know, I can't really argue too much with the humanitarian drop on the people holed up on the mountain. That seems like there's not too much downside to that. We are getting involved in a local conflict. But, you know, I've said before, hey, if we feel we have the capability to, through fairly limited action, have a positive impact, save people's lives, keep people from dying, I'm generally for those. I'm not a complete non-interventionist. What I worry about is the law of unintended consequences. And, you know, the example here is not the humanitarian airdrop, but the airstrikes to help defend the city of Erbil. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, by the way. But, you know, because, okay, so we're doing some airstrikes, we're knocking out some artillery, we're doing this. What if it doesn't work? What if, you know, nevertheless, ISIS makes progress, comes into the city, maybe even takes over? What if a week from now, they're surrounding the U.S. consulate? We get into an Iranian hostage type situation, or screw that. Maybe they just kill everybody. I don't know. Do we escalate? Would it actually be smarter at this point to say, not our fight, we're leaving? You know, if the consulate is at risk, we evacuate it and don't worry about it anymore. Now, And, you know, I recognize that from all reports, this Islamic State group is brutal and awful and repressive and the most backwards that you could possibly imagine in all kinds of areas. These are not good guys. You would not want to be, in the area that they take over, unless you're one of them. But is it our fight? And even if we are in the fight, can we actually produce a positive difference? And by positive difference, I almost always mean, are less people going to die, be injured, maimed, have a better quality of life, or worse quality of life, whatever, than if we didn't? And part of the problem with all of these things is those questions are always unknowable. You can't, you know, we are so bad at predicting the future. You know, so saying, if we do this, what will happen? Versus if we do that, what will happen? Versus if we do nothing, what will happen? You know, the answer in almost all cases is we have no clue. And so how do you pick between those actions? Well, okay, there's all kinds of uncertainty. But, you know, you have to pick which one you think will have the best overall outcome. And you have to meld that with an idea of what of exactly how big that uncertainty is. You know, you have to allow for the fact that unintended consequences are often bad. You often get drawn into something bigger than you wanted it to be. You often end up having secondary effects that you didn't count on. I mean, the whole Iraq war under the second George W. Bush, you know, is this kind of thing. I believe they honestly thought that they could go in there, mop up, that they would be welcomed as liberators, and that everything would be, you know, sunshiny and roses and wonderful, and they just didn't think it through. Now, of course, if they'd listened to a whole bunch of experts, you know, including some in their own administration, they would have perhaps anticipated something different, but, you know, they wanted to go where they went. So be it. But there's a lot of uncertainty. So I just think that the right approach is actually that there should be a very strong presumption against intervention. There shouldn't be a presumption that, hey, something is wrong in the world, therefore the Americans should do something, do something, do something. No, it should be more along the lines of the default expected behavior should be non-involvement unless there is an extremely clear case, and, you know, I say extremely, but, you know, these things are relative. Unless there is a clear case that whatever action we're looking at has a high chance of success, and will get us what we want. And you know, maybe what Obama's doing right now is that sort of very limited action. We're only talking about a few airstrikes right now. And if it stays at a few airstrikes, okay, you know, we did a few airstrikes. Maybe we sent a message, and the Islamic State backs off of Kurdistan, and, you know, we avoid future conflict. But again, you know, the downside is, what if we're getting ourselves into something a lot bigger? You know, and is Obama really willing to cut the cord and say, you know, it was worth a few airstrikes, but it's not worth whatever higher level of involvement we might be talking about? And will he be willing to pull back out, even if it looks like a loss, if the measures he's doing right now don't succeed? Those are some of the key questions. And I don't know. As usual, it's a wait and see. We'll see what happens. We'll talk about it next week. We'll talk about it the week again. And, you know, but there's a very real possibility that, you know, again, to use the Libya example, the first couple of weeks, everything looked fine. You know, Gaddafi's on the run. Then Gaddafi got killed, which it maybe wasn't the optimal outcome. Maybe he could have been captured and put on trial or something like that. But it looked okay for the first couple of weeks. And then, you know, in the whatever, it's been a year or two since then, the whole area has just been falling apart into chaos. Because guess what? You know, Gaddafi may have had his bad points. No denying that. But he somewhat kept order and kept things moving. And, you know, for a while there, he was rehabilitated. You remember he got rid of his nuclear weapons program and apologized. And, and he was... one of the good guys for a while. The Bush administration had opened up relationships with him again and was doing this and that and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, he was bad, but was he really worse than the chaos that's happened since then? Open question. Same kind of question you ask about Iraq and Saddam Hussein. I think a lot of people would argue at this point that Iraq was better off with Saddam Hussein. A lot of people would argue that it's better off without him, and obviously what you really want is to not have Saddam Hussein and not have the kind of situation you have in Iraq either, but hey, guess what? That wasn't on the table. Anyway, Iraq. We'll figure out what happens. Well, we won't figure anything out. We'll just observe as it happens, and I'm crossing my fingers that we have fairly limited involvement here. And again, you know, to put it out on the table again, my thought is, you know, not our battle. Neither is Syria. Let them fight and reorganize however well they want, and then we deal with the aftermath of that. But us getting involved, us taking sides, us preferring things, just throws us in the middle of something and is dangerous. Not just in the short term in terms of involvement, but also in terms of, hey, whenever you get in the middle of something, you make enemies. If you just keep hands off, they can have their little fight and maybe they'll, you know, leave us alone. Now, of course, the Islamic State has stated, of course, that their ambitions are global. So they may have a permanent, you know, they may, in fact, have a larger danger. But so far, they're regional. Anyway, time for another break. We'll be back after this with something different yet again.
You're in The Valley, AM 1620, and LiganAirRadio.com. This is where you'll find your favorite songs.
Everybody's doing a brand new dance now.
Come on, baby. Let's do the twist.
Well, they got a new dance, and it goes like this.
Classic music for a classic American town, AM 1620, and in stereo at LiganAirRadio.com, The Valley.
Okay, I'm back for the third segment. I almost, during that last break, went ahead and called out of work. Maybe I should take some meds. I'm sure, you know, whatever. I haven't taken any yet today. I probably should. Anyway, time for a new segment. Let's roll the dice again. Item number two. What's item number two? Oh, Google scanning for child porn. So the background on this is somebody was arrested for sharing child porn images. And it turned out that the way they'd gotten caught was that the image that they were scanning matched the signature of a known child porn image. And Google is scanning for them. For everybody who uses Gmail, whenever you send an attachment, they're scanning to see if that attachment matches send or receive an attachment, I presume, matches a database of known child porn images. Google says that they only do this for child porn. And that it's part of, you know, your terms of services with Google say you won't use it for this kind of stuff. Your terms of service for Google allow them to monitor your email. It's what they do in order to provide advertising for you. It's their main business. And so they feel that not only are they not doing anything wrong here, but they're providing a public service. Now, not a lot of people are going to argue that it's bad that, you know, this particular child porn guy got caught and is going to jail. Now, actually, I to step back just a second here, I would argue that we perhaps have the wrong approach in many of these cases where what you really, really want to go after is the people doing the abuse in the first place and creating the images and actually harming children. And that for many people, you know, if there may well be a case that, you know, allowing some guy whose mind is screwed up in such a way that he's attracted to small children to, you know, have material to jerk off to may keep him off the streets and keep him from abusing actual children. So there is actually some complicated arguments there, especially when it comes to the things that don't actually involve real children at all, like cartoons of things and things like that, which have also been prosecuted as child porn in the past, even though no actual children were harmed. Anyway, it does get to be a complicated issue, but let's take it for granted for the moment that we don't mind that we caught this guy with his child porn, with, you know, images of children being abused. And we think that's a good thing. Okay, so be it. But the, excuse me, still getting worse here. But what this means is that this is another one of those slippery slope things. Maybe Google is just using it for child porn, but do we really like the fact that the email provider is regularly on a routine basis as part of their normal business operations scanning people's email and looking for things? And maybe today they're only looking for child porn, but it's the exact same technology that would be used if they were, say, looking for copyrighted material. Or just images people don't like. Now, obviously, Google's not going to go down those directions. They've got a very narrow... The problem with slippery slope arguments is it actually does take something to get rolling down that slope. But you've got all the infrastructure. You've got it in place. Is that really what you want? If, you know, we've talked before here about how email is inherently... The whole model of email. Email was created at a time where the model was trust. Everybody assumed everybody trusted everybody else. Nothing was encrypted. Nothing was secure. There was no verification of identity. None of this stuff. You could just send email. And it was, you know, and anybody with the technical know-how could snoop on that email, could look at it, could scan it in various ways. But everybody assumed everybody was good guys and wasn't going to do that kind of thing. And that's clearly not the case in the real world. We have spammers. We have, you know, NSA doing their thing. We have other, obviously, if NSA is doing it, other foreign intelligence agencies are doing the same thing. We've got this report this week of, you know, the Russian group who reportedly stole 1.5 billion user ID password combinations. You've got all kinds of nefarious things out there. And it's 17 hours. And, you know, when you think about email, when you think about what you would want ideally in an email situation, you want something that has all of the same protections around it, legal and otherwise, as old-fashioned physical email. Old-fashioned physical email. You basically want to assume that the only person reading what you're sending is the person you sent it to. And maybe you acknowledge that there are certain legal cases where the government can get a court order and intercept your mail or look at it or do something or other. But you expect there to be some sort of due process around that. You expect that that only happens when somebody's under suspicion for something. You know, you're And you don't expect that as a, you know, a normal part of business, someone's looking at all your mail. And, but it's the core business model of places like Gmail. If you don't pay for your email service, then they're making money off advertising, and chances are they're looking at your mail to target that advertising. And it's part of the trade-off you make. But is part of the trade-off you're making also that you expect them to be looking through your email for bad things? And again, the argument here is not, okay, can we all agree child porn is bad? And can we say that, you know, okay, then we agree? The question is that the definition of what is bad may shift over time. Like, for instance, Google is specifically in what they've said about this case says, for example, they don't look for people planning bank robberies. So feel free to plan your bank robbery over Gmail, you know, because they're not looking for that. But they're not looking for that today. What's to stop them from looking for that tomorrow? And, you know, draw the line wherever you want. You know, the problem is, because you could still say, okay, well, we want to stop those bank robberies too, right? And, well, yes, we do probably. And if somebody's planning a terrorist act, we want to stop that too. And, you know, this and that. And you can think of all kinds of good reasons for this. And this goes back to the general argument about surveillance and everything else that, well, if you're not doing anything bad, what do you have to hide? Why do you care? And the fundamental problem with that is because somebody is deciding what to care about and what not to care about. And that process is not out in the open. It's not something that everybody has input to, and we come to some sort of societal arrangement on this. In this case, it's not even an issue of government or law. It's Google deciding what they care about and what they want to do this with. So Google has decided that they're going to look for child porn, but they're not going to look for copyright infringement, and they're not going to look for bank robberies, and they're not going to look for this, and they're not going to look for that. But fundamentally, who's deciding? Some random person at Google. Yeah, presumably someone mid-level at least, maybe a little higher up. But, you know, some random person at Google is making that decision. It's not... and again, you can say, hey, Google's a private company. If you have a problem with it, then use a different email provider. But here's the thing. You know, the terms of service basically say they can do whatever the hell they want. You know, we didn't know about this specific exception until an actual example came out where someone was arrested for it, and it became public that it was because Google turned them in. So you don't know. You don't know exactly what they're doing or what they're not doing. You just know that they can do whatever the hell they want. And it just seems to me like this is not the model. It's not the model I want. I don't know. Everybody makes different choices in terms of their trade-offs here. And obviously, tons and tons of people are perfectly fine with Google having the ability to look at their stuff whenever they feel like, for whatever reason. I mean, the presumption is it's mostly for advertising. And okay, well, that's a trade-off because it's free. But, you know, there's all kinds of other stuff going on. Okay, they're looking for child porn. Maybe in the future they'll look for other crimes. They may be doing all kinds of, you know, anonymized analysis of what people use communication for, blah, blah, blah. There's all kinds of stuff there. And, you know, I guess lots of people may be perfectly comfortable with that. And I guess the people who aren't and who are cognizant of such things don't use Gmail. But it bothers me that all of this infrastructure is being laid that allows all this kind of stuff. And for the most part, people don't care. And I think it's one of these things where at some point along the line, we're going to slip further down the slippery slope. And at some point, we're going to get to somewhere where we're uncomfortable. And it's going to be too late. and we're already down there. And well, and as I've said before, expectations also change. You know, the expectations of privacy of, you know, 20 somethings today are very different than the expectations of 40 somethings are very different than the expectations of 60 somethings. And you'll probably see that change. But, you know, I would hope for a move in the other direction where, and there, Yahoo did make an announcement within the last few days that they're working on setting up a system where you can have end-to-end PGP encryption of email that goes through their service as long as the people on the other side are there too, are set up as well. And I think moves in that direction are positive. I think the default behavior on all of these things should be full 100% end-to-end encryption with the keys controlled by the people at the end of the communication, not by the intermediaries. I think a big hole in all of these, you know, many of these services is that, yeah, they'll handle the encryption for you and make it easy, but then the third party holds the keys. No, I think it has to be structured in such a way that the people doing the communicating somehow are the ones that own the keys. But you have to do it in a non-technical way that, you know, you don't have to be a cryptographic expert to handle your own keys. And that's tough. That's really tough. But I think that's the direction things should be moving in. It's not the direction that things necessarily are moving in. I think because of all the Snowden stuff and all of the other revelations that have come out recently, we've got, you know, a group of activists. Like I said, after Snowden, you know, this has spawned, you know, a whole bunch of people who are trying to come up with solutions to this kind of stuff. The question is, will any of them become popular? And will it get to the point where, you know, it's the default and where you assume all internet communication is securely encrypted and can only be accessed by the people on the two ends of it? You know, I don't want to make it. I mean, I have sympathy for, we want to stop certain crimes. We want to stop some crimes before they happen. We want to catch other crimes after they happen. But I don't like the cost. I don't like the cost of having an infrastructure that means that the third-party companies and the governments can sort of at will dip into the communication stream and find things that interest them. Because even if you trust your government today, you may not trust the government tomorrow or next year or the year after. Or, well, what about, you know, okay, you're sitting happy in the United States right now. What if you go on a trip somewhere else? You know, some other government may utilize these technologies in a way that that you have less approval of. And you know, forget about you traveling there. What about the people in that country? You know, I don't want, you know, random government X to have this capability any more than I want the U.S. to. And, you know, you know, many countries, of course, outright give them the right, give themselves the ability legally to do whatever the hell they want with this. So I think the solution has to be a technological one. It has to be one where the technology is built in such a way that it defends against these kinds of intrusions, period. And yes, there is a trade-off there. And the cost is, it is harder to catch some criminals. It is harder to stop certain acts before they happen. But I think that's a worthy trade-off. And I think, you know, that's something, you know, there are plenty of ways to go after people for what they have actually done or what you can sort of find, quote-unquote, in real life, that, you know, the communications online should be relatively secure. And it should be a really extraordinary thing to eavesdrop on it. And I don't mind if by extraordinary it means they have to actually get into your house and put a microphone in your house that's not part of the secure connection. I think that's okay. I think there should be a high bar for government, law enforcement, and frankly, I think people have put the bar way, way, way too low in terms of what they will allow various corporations to have about them. Hell, even me, you know? And, you know, I mentioned a while ago that I found on Twitter that I'd installed one of these trackers. What's it called? Ghostery. It's a browser plugin that keeps track of sort of what trackers are on various websites that you can look at. And I opened up my own website, and there was like 22 trackers on there. And I knew about, like, I had intentionally put on my site 3, maybe 4. And I saw that and I was like, this is ridiculous. I'm getting rid of it. I think I've got it down to 1 now. 1 that I actually use myself and keep track of. It turns out that most of those 22 were from the little bug I'd had on there the longest was a site meter bug that I put on in 2003 or whatever, when I converted my site from a static site to a blog. That, you know, lists the number of visitors. There's a little counter at the bottom. And it turns out that it wasn't just producing one tracker for SiteMeter, but it was bringing along all of these others for the ride. And so I killed it. I had just passed over 300,000 visitors, and I'd had it on my site for over 10 years, and I was sad to take it off. I meant to make a blog post about it, but I haven't. But, you know, there's no need for that. Like, all of these companies need to know that you went to abelsmay.com. Come on. You know, I mean, and they don't really care. And now I kept the one for Google Analytics so I can see who's looking at my site, sort of, you know, with some anonymization. And of course, that means Google knows it too. But they've got a really nice tracker, you know, so. And by the way, at this very moment, no one has been on my website in the last 30 minutes, so I feel sad. I think people take the giving away of their information or the making of their information easily accessible to third parties, including governments, they care way less about it than they should. And I applaud any technological innovations that make it easier to keep things private. We'll see if any of them succeed, because I think the trend is certainly in the opposite direction. The trend is whatever you do online, you expect, you know, a dozen companies to know about it, and you fully expect that your own government and probably several others know about it as well. I just don't like that answer. Anyway, that's it for that topic. We'll take another break, and we'll be back with one more thing. Back after this.
This is Sam here with an opportunity for you. Yes, you heard me right, an opportunity. For you loyal listeners of Curmudgeon's Corner, you know, every once in a while, Yvonne can't make a show. And I do a solo show, which, you know, I think I do okay. But, you know, it's always interesting to have a second person to bounce off. And just in general, sometimes it's good to hear another voice. If you, yes, you, have some things to say about the kinds of things we usually talk about on Curmudgeon's Corner, you know, politics, current events, news, tech, then drop me a line at abelsmay@abelsmay.com letting me know. And hey, I'll keep you in mind and maybe ask if you can join us sometime, either on a regular show with Yvonne if it's something particularly pressing that you maybe have an expertise on, or just, you know, hey, an opportunity to co-host when Yvonne is out. Who knows? Now, I am not guaranteeing that if you send me an email, you will definitely get on the show, but let me know if you're interested, and I'll keep you in mind. Thanks, and now, back to the show.
Okay, I am back. And hey, in the last break, along with listening to that last segment, I did indeed call in. Well, actually, I didn't call in. I emailed in to work and say I wasn't coming. Because, you know, the stuffiness has been increasing. My eyes have been watering. I'm just a big glob of snot and goo, and I wouldn't be pleasant to go in anyway. And it's just getting worse, not better. I also went downstairs and had my wife. I went down to my wife and said, "Give me the strongest, like, head cold allergy stuff you have." And she gave me a couple red pills. I don't know what they are. I fully expect that they're the kind that's going to knock me on my ass and have me fall asleep for most of the afternoon. If I had been going into work, I would have wanted to leave, you know, about an hour ago at this point. But as I've been going slow in between these segments because I've been dragging more and more. So anyway, I'm not going to work, but I am going to persevere through and give you guys the fourth segment you deserve, even though we're already over an hour, or we will be within a few seconds. We're really close. So time to roll again. I've got six potential topics still on my list here. The election 2016 stuff, the incumbents getting reelected, Ebola, the thing about the watch list that's been leaking out, Israel, Gaza, and Clinton's comments on Osama bin Laden. So let's see where we go. Clinton on Osama bin Laden. So be it. Basically what came out was there was a recording that was actually done on September 10th, 2001. So the day before the attacks on the Twin Towers in New York and the Pentagon and wherever the fourth plane was going before it got downed in Pennsylvania. And basically Clinton said there was a time in his presidency where he could have gotten bin Laden. Bin Laden was in Kandahar. They knew exactly where he was. They had surveillance on him. They could have taken him out. But it probably would have taken a large number of civilians out with him, probably on the order of 300. That was Clinton's take on it. And he decided not to do it. He said he did not want to take that extra collateral damage. He didn't take the shot. And of course, a few years later, bin Laden was responsible for the attacks on 9/11. I've got a box of tissue in front of me now. And it actually is Kleenex, name brand Kleenex. Anyway, I tweeted that I think President Clinton made the right call. And people could dispute that by saying, well, hey, Sam, you know, you've said that one of the criteria for these kinds of things is, does it prevent a higher number of deaths? And isn't this one fairly clear cut? You know, okay, maybe you do kill 300 innocent civilians, but 9/11 was, what, around 3,000 innocent civilians killed. So isn't this one of the cases where it's worth it? And I would say no. And why do I say no? Because, of course, you know, as we were talking about in the previous decision, there's a lot of fog here. In retrospect, we know that 9/11 happened and 3,000 people were killed. But there's no way President Clinton could possibly have known that at the time he was making this decision. He knew Osama was potentially a dangerous player. He knew he had done attacks on American interests in the past. He knew that Osama probably wanted to do even more. But there's no way of knowing that, you know, 9/11 would have happened. Even if you knew, he's going to try to do attacks. You don't know anything specific. You don't know that there might not be other opportunities to stop it later on that did not involve killing 300 people. And in fact, in the case of 9/11, one could argue that, in fact, there were missed opportunities to stop these people up to and including the day before it happened, or the morning it happened. Hell, even while it was in progress. You know, one plane was stopped. You know, the other three potentially could have been in similar ways, except people didn't know what to expect. So, you know, the advantage the fourth plane had, of course, was that they already had information about what had happened in the first three. I think he made the right call. Because the other bit of it, of course, is even if you had killed Osama, you don't actually know it would have prevented 9/11 either. Maybe it would have. Maybe whoever replaced Osama would have done the same thing, or something worse. You know, the future is fundamentally unknowable. There are too many variables going on. So you kind of have to make decisions based on the very, very local, short-term things you can see. And what could you see in this situation? You might be able to kill a bad guy, but the cost would be killing hundreds of innocent civilians at the same time. The right call is not to do it. And this ties in, you know, to the Israel-Gaza stuff we've been talking about too, in terms of proportionality. Okay, everything they've done in the last few weeks, and there's, you know, there was another ceasefire, and then Hamas has broken the ceasefire, but so far Israel hasn't, and so, you know, blah, blah, blah. But there are ongoing events there. But there's the question of, do we have a high degree of confidence that killing these approximately 2,000 people in Gaza is actually going to save that many or more lives in Israel? No. No, we don't. We don't know that at all. Might it prevent some violence in the future? Maybe. I'd argue it's just as likely it's going to cause more, because you've enraged yet another generation of Palestinians. But in any case, with the Bin Laden situation, I think President Clinton very much made the right call. I'm not sure George W. Bush would have made the same call. I'm not sure Obama would have made the same call. Obama's, as I mentioned earlier, he's shown very little reluctance to, you know, use drone strikes and similar tactics to kill people we have determined are bad guys, even if there are significant civilian casualties. Now, none of those were, you know, Bill Clinton was saying that there might be hundreds of civilian casualties. I don't believe any of Obama's strikes have been at that scale. There have been, total when you add them all up, certainly. But in any single strike, I think, a couple dozen, most one. I mean, we've heard about various wedding parties where lots of people were killed and things along those lines. It was certainly, a bunch of people, but not quite at the scale Bill Clinton was saying. So I don't know whether Obama would have taken the strike, too. I have this suspicion that he would. But again, that's now, knowing what happened at 9/11, with more information, with what Bill Clinton knew at the time, I think he absolutely positively made the right call. I've seen a lot of things on Twitter about, criticizing Clinton and saying, everything that happened in 9/11 was his fault because he could have gotten Bin Laden. And I think that is fundamentally unfair. You don't have that kind of hindsight. And even if you did, you don't know, like I said, you don't know the other, you kill Bin Laden, it could still happen. Something worse could happen. You have to make the decisions based on the short term, what's happening right now within the very limited time frame that I can predict with a good deal of certainty. I can't predict what's going to happen years out based on the consequences of what I do today. Hell, I can't even with a lot of reliability predict what's going to happen a couple months out. I'd say there's even a lot of uncertainty a couple weeks out. But I can predict the very short term, if I launch that bomb, am I going to kill folks? And is that going to, is that directly going to affect anything else on the ground? You can know that very short term calculation. And I think Clinton made the right call. I'm glad he made that call. I wish that some of the other people in charge in the more than a decade since 9/11 had been equally conservative. And yes, I'm using the word conservative about Bill Clinton, because what he is doing is being cautious and minimalist in his actions, which is fundamentally what the word conservative should mean. Doing the least you need to do. Anyway, good job, Bill Clinton. All of these people criticizing that decision, I think, are full of it. It was the right way to go. I think that's it. I think I'm done. I think I'm out of here. I can sort of feel the meds starting to kick in a little bit. But I think my next reaction, and I to somewhat quote the message I sent into work, I'm going to bail. I already took the meds that will probably knock me out. And I'm going to go sit somewhere quiet beside a box of tissues. And I got the box of tissues right here. I'm sitting at my desk, and there's all kinds of stuff I would like to do at my computer. But if I was up to doing that, I'd be doing the work stuff on my work computer, which is a few feet to my side. I'm probably just going to go sit or lie down on the couch, watch some TV, maybe go to sleep. I'm done. I'm out of here. Thanks, everybody, for listening again. As usual, my email is abelsmay@abelsmay.com, or you can reach me at Twitter at abelsmay. Thank you very much for listening. Tell your friends. Have a great week, and we'll be back next time. I'm assuming Yvonne will be back with us again next time. Thanks again. Adios.